The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
So some of the most stunning homes, including what was, I think, at one point, the single most expensive residential property in human history. I think I could be wrong on that one, but some of the most stunning homes across some of the most stunning locations. So through Beverly Hills, around Malibu, all of the fancier areas of LA, and then further across, including in the mountains, looking over San Antonio. They are all thanks to inspiration derived from Brother Crow, the headmaster of St. David's in Artane in the late 80s. Paul McLean is the man who was subject to that inspiration and is responsible for the McLean Design Studio. Paul, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Now you're bringing back poor memories. I'm thinking of it. There's a certain type of inspiration that Brother Crow used to do, and it wasn't the gentle kind.
You started off gazing out your window at the architectural merits of Coolock. Yeah. Is this right?
That's true. It's very true.
How do you go from that to the kind of stuff? Because to put it, it's very hard to describe the what you do. But I mean, the kind of properties, Avicii bought one of your places secondhand from the original yes. owner. And it has that, it's like falling water meets modernity, gazing over. I mean, these are stunning houses. How do you go from a background in North Dublin to that?
Well, thank you for saying that they're all right looking. No, I don't know. It just happened. I don't know where I always wanted to be an architect, Anton, since I was like 4 or 5 years old, my mother tells me. And I don't know where it came from. There's nobody in my family like that. And, you know, back in those days in the Stone Age, you had to go on your bike to the library if you wanted to find it. And there's about 3 architecture books in the Coolock Library, and I had them on rotation. And actually, funny, you should mention Falling Water, but that was probably, must have been like 7 or 8, maybe, or maybe 10, I don't know. But I found a book on Falling Water in the library, and that was really kind of set me off, because I couldn't really imagine that was a house at the time, because I thought houses looked like houses in Dublin.
And Falling Water, of course, is one of Frank Lloyd Wright's seminal projects.
Most famous project, most famous probably residential project in the world. And, you know, so I kind of went on this journey, wanted to become an architect, and most credit to Brother Crow and the other people at St. David's, because they were really, really helpful. You know, sometimes when you're a kid, you don't realize how many people are often helping you in the background. Like, you think about teachers, they're just a pain. But I had so much help without realizing I was being helped. You know, like I found out Brother Crow had a job for me at an architect's office, and I guess, you know, a summer job. And it was like he just basically coerced the architect who was doing the extension at the school, said, not getting a job unless you give Paul a job. And I was like, I didn't know that till later, you know, till I got there. And they're like, well, Brother Crow said you had to work here for a few weeks or else. So, you know, it's people like that helping you.
So have any of your glamorous LA clients gone, you know, these designs look an awful lot like that extension to St. David's?
Yeah, it's a common thing. It comes up once a week at least, you know. So, and then obviously I got into Bolton Street. I was studying architecture, and I had this, I just don't know. Me, it just houses. That was my thing. I didn't really want to do other types of architecture, never really have. And, you know, Los Angeles still is. And probably, you know, when I was at school reading about it, it's the best place to do, you know, modern homes, I think, on the planet. And there's just a lot of good reasons for that, such as obviously the climate is huge, so it gives you a lot of flexibility. And there's people with the resources, which is also like very important. And, you know, just even the topography and so on. So it sets up like a situation where people can be experimental. And I've, you know, so I kind of headed out here after college and had a job for a few years and then put up my shingle. And like the rest is history, as they say.
Now, when you talk about the resources, give us some sense of scale, both in terms of the investments in some of these properties and the square footage of some of these properties.
Well, they come in all shapes and sizes, but generally big. I think part of the problem is that obviously, you know, you're designing for a luxury market, so people have a long list of things that they require. But they they tend to, in our office, we tend to mostly design houses that are 10,000 square feet or 1,000 square meters and upwards. And they go all the way up to basically, you know, 100,000 square feet or so. So they can be enormous. And some of that's based on the fact that, you know, they are so expensive to build and the land is so expensive. So people, even, you know, despite their budget, they want to get the most value, I guess, of the land.
I realize that to you, jaded as you are by exposure to all of this glamour.
Not jaded.
This sounds almost normal at this point, but let me just go back and see if I can get some perspective on this. The average, let's say, I mean, what, three-bed semi-D in Dublin, you're in and around, at a decent size, you'd be 2,000 square feet. Isn't that right?
Yes.
Right.
Correct.
So 100,000 square feet is 50 of them.
Yes. Sometimes the mind boggles. We try not to think about that. You know, it's either that or it's like two IKEAs, one or the other, whichever way you want to go.
But where do you as an architect even begin with that? Because you're past the point of starting from how will the people use the space? Well, not how will the people use the space, but you're not constrained by I have to fit bedrooms and bathrooms and sitting rooms into this relatively net small space. You are blank sheet of paper territory.
Well, one of the complaints about that giant house is like there wasn't enough bedrooms.
How many bedrooms were in it?
Five-bedroom house. No, I mean, it was probably eight bedrooms, but there were a lot of staff rooms as well. But I think that leads on to, it's more like, it's not really, someone building a house that large or even a house that's 20,000 square feet or something, there's always another agenda there. It's not like you don't build a 20,000 square foot house because, you know, you have 100 family members living with you. And the same as you don't build a kitchen the size of a three-bedroom semi, you know, because you want to cook in it. I think a lot of it's about entertainment and, you know, obviously showing off, which is, you know, been going on since the pharaohs built the tombs, right? They've been the pyramids. People want to demonstrate like where they are in life and how successful they've been. But they also, our houses are often really about entertaining on a really grand scale. And one thing that I think has kind of shifted in the last 20 years or so is the idea that people would entertain at home. You know, so if you go back like 50 years, people would probably hire a venue to have a party. But now people are saying they want to do that in their house. They want to do wellness in their house. They want to do work from home. And
land of 737, you know, the usual stuff.
Pretty much, yeah, exactly.
Now, the bit that I don't get in all this is, what in, because I can understand the business, the way that you have built it in LA. I don't get the inflection point between Ireland and LA, because you're in Ireland doing what kind of projects and what kind of work before you jumped on the plane?
Well, I was at college and I was very lucky. I had, you know, every summer I had a job and a different job. And I had a job in Dublin one summer, a job in London. I went to Sydney and I worked for an architect who did residences in Sydney for a year, came back. Then I spent a year working for McCullough Mulvan when they and Group 91 won the Temple Bar project. So I was doing bits and pieces with them, obviously not very experienced, still at school. And when I left school, I knew I wanted to do housing. So I went to LA and I found a job with an architect who did the type of houses that I like to do. And I worked for him for 4 or 5 years. And then, you know, I ended up where I worked in Orange County, most of the projects had to be approved in a public hearing capacity, so you have to stand up and explain the project. And, you know, Irish accents go a long way with that. In fact, I remember one night I was told by the chairman of the board that she just couldn't say no because I kept talking in the accent. Eventually she gave up. But I got a little bit of public speaking experience. And then as I started out, I ended up doing a lot of houses in coastal California and Orange County. And that house that you mentioned that Avicii bought was for a friend of mine at the time. And he had to sell it in 2008 when the market collapsed. And it sold for a lot of money when everything was going to hell in a handbasket. And he, you know, so that kind of got us a bit of a reputation for designing houses that might sell. And then we spent the next 4 or 5 years doing speculative projects, which was really surprising because it was a deep recession and you don't usually do houses for sale in a recession. But by the time the houses were finished, there was no more recession and they sold for enormous amounts of money. And, you know, if you sell a house for enormous amount of money, people think you're a great architect. It doesn't really matter what you do. Now, if the house hadn't sold, it'd be a totally different story now, you know, because they've been a terrible architect, you know. So we kind of segued as quick as we possibly could back into homeowners and so on. And so it's just kind of like, it's very interesting that you can kind of, I know for me personally, I can pinpoint that that house that Avicii later bought, the Blue Jay Way house, was like an inflection point that got us from doing, you know, really nice houses, you know, like oceanfront houses and the view houses on the coast of Orange County, but, you know, to kind of being on the LA scene and getting to do projects all over LA. And then that in turn led to projects around the world.
And now, by the way, if you're listening and you have access to Google, if you just put in Avicii House Blue Jay Way, you'll see the house that Paul is talking about. It really is absolutely stunning. There's no diplomatic way to ask this question. Given, Paul, who your client list are, and given, obviously, the vast sums of money that you have accrued through the work that you are doing, how come you haven't gone up yourself?
Gone up, what do you mean?
As in, you still seem tremendously normal for a man who's rubbing shoulders. With all these types.
I'm going to be out on the streets next week. I know it, you know? So, no, I think, I don't know. I like people, right? I do like people. And I do enjoy the people that we meet because they've all, one thing that's really kind of great about this job is that people don't, you know, build new houses when their lives are falling apart. Usually they might fall apart because of the house, but they don't start that way. So they're in a good frame of mind and I meet people, you know, from all walks of life and they've all become very successful, you know, to be kind of hiring us and buying the land. They do have to have a lot of money. So somehow they've made a lot of money and the stories are amazing, you know, and they're just generally really interesting people that you feel like you can learn from. So I really enjoy that part of it.
Drop us a few names there while you're at it.
I can't say names. Don't go down that way. You know,
I'll just say names and we'll listen to
Mr. NDA. How about that? You know,
if I just say famous people, can we just, you just make a grunt and we'll try to figure out based on that whether or not you've done their house.
Try your best.
Beyonce. Oh, there was a pause. That's a definite yes. I'm ticking Beyonce. One of the things, though, that's interesting about this is I assume that the work that you do, given the manner or given the traditional building in the area that you're in, albeit it's not traditional at the kind of scale that you do, but there's very little in an Irish context. Like Irish vernacular architecture and American, particularly LA architecture, are radically different. We didn't have anything like the level of timber frame construction that you would have over there. We didn't have the same types of materials. You didn't even have the same kind of technology in terms of house wraps and that kind of stuff. So did you have to go again from scratch?
It kind of, you know, business is 25 years old now, Anton, so everything has been developing as I went. But yeah, I did have to start from scratch and everything was completely different when I began, but you kind of learn as you go and keep learning, hopefully. And I mean, a lot of learning I get to do these days is probably from, you know, resorts and wellness and so on, because we have clients who are, you know, want to put those type of things in their home. Like we're in a house, for example, right now in Turks and Caicos, just in the Caribbean, and it's like about 35,000 square feet, and it has like a 600-foot beachfront, and we're doing a pool that's 500 feet long. So we've had to learn, like, how do you do a pool that's bigger than the pool at the Four Seasons? You know. And our lovely client, she gets cold, you know, so we have to keep the pool heated to 94 degrees, which I think is about 35 Celsius. So that in itself is an enormous challenge, trying to figure out how to keep a pool that warm, even in the tropics.
Now, hang on for a minute. A 500 foot of water heated to 94 degrees permanently year round.
By solar. You know, so
what did they do? Just buy a small island and cover it in solar panels?
Well, you know, a relatively small island. Yeah, exactly.
I love the fact that just to the point where we think we've maxed out the fanciness, you know, we've done Blue Jay Way. We've talked about San Antonio, Bel Air, Malibu, all of that. You whip out 35,000 square feet in Turks and Caicos like it's nothing.
Well, it's helping, it's keeping the children in shoes, let's put it that way, you know.
So do you ever regret that you just didn't join a good, solid architectural firm in Dublin and be cranking out terraced housing?
I mean, I still pinch myself. I never imagined in a million years, even all the people that work for me, we never imagined that we would be so fortunate and have, you know, such it's right. When you stand back and look at it, it's kind of all a bit insane, but, it's a great job. I mean, you know, as I said, people are usually in a good mood. You know, the only two problems are time and money. You know, everyone has a budget, no matter what level they're at, they still have a budget. And if they have, like, if they have as much money as God, they still don't want to feel like they're getting ripped off, or that, you know, they still want value for money, you know? So money is always an issue, and time is the other issue. And, so we try really hard with people to have serious conversations at the beginning about what those two things are going to look like. And if we can get them on board where it should be, then they can actually enjoy the process and have fun. But if either of those two things are off, like if they expect they can build it in a year when it's going to take five, or, you know, if they think it's going to cost, you know, I don't know, $500 a foot, and it's actually going to cost $3,000 a foot, for example, then, you know, everyone will be miserable for the 10 years it'll take to build that house.
Okay, I can't resist, Paul. I'm sorry, I've held back for as long as I can. What's the biggest budget you've ever gone back to a client and said, we're looking in the region of X?
Well, if I told you, I shouldn't.
Go on.
Figure. So it was I told someone recently that they were going to have to spend $150 million on a remodel. And that was not an easy conversation.
This is like Turks and Caicos. I love that it's a remodel. It's not even...
No, it's not Turks and Caicos. No.
I don't mean that. I mean, you're kicking it up a level again. It wasn't even a greenfield site. This is just a fixer-upper.
A fixer-upper. It's a big fixer, slightly large fixer-upper. No, but I think there are some of these houses that get into that. I don't know if that's like nine figures at this stage, you know, so over $100 million. And it's still amazing to me that people will, you know, spend that type of money, or more the fact that they trust us to spend the money for them.
But it does. I mean, it brings us back somewhat to the Frank Lloyd Wright thing, because again, Falling Water was an amazing piece of architectural design. It was doable because it was funded by a client who had the deep pockets and the willingness to let him have his way a bit. There's not many architects, I imagine, who are in the position that you're in, where you have those things where people will say, I have the pockets to fund it and I want your vision and your creativity. That has to be a brilliant place to be in your career.
It's a nerve-wracking place to be as well, but it is, yeah, it's wonderful. And people are expecting you to come up with something, you know, interesting. Like, oh God, what if this time I can't think of anything? Well, you know, we just kind of build on what we've done before. And I think one place where we're very fortunate, we just do those certain style of very modern contemporary homes. And so people generally, they come to us because they like what they saw. So that always helps me and everyone who works here, because we're thinking, okay, if we just do something a little bit like what we did before and then maybe try and improve upon it, then they're probably going to like it, which is a great place to be in. But sometimes I do wonder, like, why do we just try and keep doing something different? And, you know, we did a pool once that was acrylic on, you know, it was like an acrylic bridge. And so you kind of see the water as you walk underneath it. So then the next time we did a pool, and now it was like, it was a cantilevered acrylic pool. And now we guys have got houses in Dubai, which is like, you know, an acrylic pool on the roof, four stories up. And I'm like, one of these days, I'm going to get in an awful lot of trouble.
You are involved as well in Design Week, isn't that right? Coming up at the end of the month?
Yes. Very excited about that. Get to come back to Dublin and to get embarrassed in front of all my old friends.
Are you going back to St. David's? Will you have a look at that extension that led to it all?
I don't think Mary would let me in. No, I doubt it. But no, I'm very excited about Design Week, because I don't think we've ever had something like that in Dublin before. It's the initial chance to do this. And I do get to participate in some here. And I think it's just a fantastic thing that people get out and get a chance to talk and hear what people are doing and see what other people are doing and interact with other designers. And even just for people in general public, it's a great experience just to kind of get into that world and just get exposure to people that you probably wouldn't really get exposure to otherwise.
Well, while you're over, I've been thinking about getting the attic converted.
I can triple your budget in 5 minutes.
Up until now, I hadn't considered a cantilevered acrylic pool, but you've opened my eyes to a whole new way to go.
So many things we could do, Anton. It could be amazing.
Paul, it has been a great pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much for your time. That is Paul McLean, who is, of course, Dublin-born and very now LA-based. And if you want to have a look, you can go on McLean Design Studio and all of their works are up there. And they really are absolutely stunning projects. And if you want to see the man in person, Design Week at the end of this month. Paul, thanks again.
Thanks a million, Anton. Really appreciate it.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.